Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode number 39 of Imprint Cast, the podcast dedicated to the Australian boutique label Imprint Films. My name is Tony Meeches, and joining me as always is my partner and colleague, John Matthews. John, how are you doing today?
Good, doing well. Yes, looking forward to this episode. I look forward to speaking about these titles. But yeah, been good, Tony.
Same here. These titles are really good, especially for that month. This whole month is just incredible. And of course, we wouldn't do this episode either way without our very special colleague with us, our film witch herself, Suzanne Boleyn. Suzanne, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. It's hot here, but I'm ready to talk about these chillers.
Excellent. Yeah,
it's quite humid here too. Yeah.
It is here too. Yes, absolutely. I can imagine how it is down in South Australia. It must be nuts. Now, for this episode, we'll be discussing the May 2024 announcement, which is definitely a theme that we all love, the three of us especially. It is a horror/ghost theme, which is incredible. Hauntings and more. And I have the perfect guests to talk about this because we're all horror fiends and we just love these type of movies. So, John, would you like to start us off with the first title of the May announcements?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely is a theme here as well. I agree, but we'll get into that definitely. I know Suzanne has some stuff to say about these titles, but yeah, kind of horror ghost themed or melodrama horror. So yeah, real interesting mix. So very excited. So we'll get started with the box set, I guess, of the month, which is The Uninvited plus The Unseen. So Lewis Allen's horrifying Oscar-nominated mysteries, The Uninvited and The Unseen, star Gail Russell in her breakout roles. Packaged together in a limited edition 2-disc hard box, accompanied by brand new special features, these are must-see films for fans of classic horror. Limited to 1,500 copies. So the first title is The Uninvited from 1944, imprint number 313. A pair of siblings from London purchase a surprisingly affordable, lonely clifftop house in Cornwall, only to discover that it actually carries a ghostly price, and soon they're caught up in a bizarre romantic triangle from beyond the grave, starring Academy Award winner Ray Milland, Dial M for Murder, and Ruth Hussey, the haunting adaptation of Dorothy McCarthy's novel, Uneasy Freehold, was praised by critics on release and one of the highest grossing films of 1944. So, the special features and technical specs. We have a 1080p high definition 2K digital transfer from a 35mm dupe negative. New audio commentary by noir expert and Film Foundation board member Alan K. Rode. New supernatural elements, video essay by Kat Allinger. We also have two original radio adaptations starring Ray Milland, Lady Astor screen guide play with Ruth Hussey and Bethy Field, 1944. Screen director's playhouse with director Lewis Allen, 1949. Theatrical trailer, audio English LCPM 2.0 mono, original aspect ratio 1.331. Also includes optional HOH subtitles. And also in this box set, we have The Unseen from 1945. So, The Unseen is a worldwide first on Blu-ray. Widower David Fielding has long been suspected of bringing about his wife's death. It helps not all when a series of murders coincides with Fielding's move to in a new neighborhood. Elizabeth Howard, governess to Fielding's children, takes it upon herself to either clear her boss's name or prove him a murderer. Based on Ethel Lena White's novel, Midnight House, and starring actor Joel McCrea, known for his role in Western films, this includes a special features, a 1080p high definition presentation from a new 2K scan from the original camera negative by Imprint Films, new audio commentary by noir expert and film founder board member Alan K. Rode, once again. New interview with critic Imogen Sarah on the career of Gail Russell. and a new video essay about the influence of Henry James' Turn of the Screw, theatrical trailer, audio English LPCM 2.0 mono, aspect ratio 1.331, and optional HOH subtitles. All right, now, this is a set that I'm very excited about. I've only seen The Uninvited. I have not seen The Unseen. And I originally saw it as a Criterion release, which came out over 10 years ago now on Blu-ray. And I really like The Uninvited. It's really haunting and eerie. And I remember, because like I said, I haven't seen it since I got that release. But I remember being just really creeped out by it. It's an eerie, eerie film, especially for the time period of the 40s. It's very effective, very chilling ghost story. And the cast is amazing. You know, Ray Milland gives one of his best performances. Big fan, but I haven't seen The Unseen. So look, this, you know, has been very excited to watch them back to back and obviously give The Uninvited a rewatch. Suzanne, you're a fan of these films?
I am. First, I want to say this is just such a great month. It's all these kind of ghostly chillers and thrillers, and just the announcement made my heart quicken with just the gothic delight of it all, and especially this one, The Uninvited. It's actually one of my favourite horror films. I agree with you. It is an absolute gem of a ghost film. It's beautifully atmospheric and eerie, and I think it's just brilliant that they've packaged it with The Unseen, which I actually can't remember if I have seen it. I may have seen it a long time ago, but I don't have much memory of it. The Uninvited, I certainly have seen many, many times, even before it came to DVD. So even though it has had a Blu-ray release before, to be packaged with this other film is quite excellent. And I'll swing over to Tony, and because I know he's seen the film, and then I can tell you just a little bit about this film as well, go into a little bit more depth. So, Tony, I know you've seen it.
Yes, I have seen The Uninvited. I had the Criterion release, same as John, a while ago, and I watched it there. But I also watched it quite recently, theatrically. At a cinema in Cremorne in Sydney, they had a special film festival, Martin Scorsese's favourite horror films, and The Uninvited was one of them. And that included a double feature with a film from 1946 called The Spiral Staircase. Both those films together, it was just fantastic. And my other half watched them with me for the very first time. She fell in love with The Uninvited. She's not a horror person. And I'm just glad that she really enjoyed it. But yeah, The Uninvited to me, it's definitely one of the best haunted house ghost stories of the 40s. It is beautiful to look at, very chilling, very frightening in some parts. But all in all, I adore the Uninvited. But yeah, watching it theatrically with an audience, it made the experience much more better. I loved it.
Ah, jealous you saw it on the big screen. That would have been quite an event.
Oh, it was. It was. And that festival itself was great. And I saw nearly all the movies, but yeah, but The Uninvited and The Spiral Staircase, I could not miss out on, especially on the big screen.
That's wonderful. And I mean, I'd go as far as to say it's one of the best ghost films ever. So it's in that realm of The Innocents, The Haunted, all those kind of films. And it's definitely up there. I would say it is a must-see film if you're into this kind of old black and white ghost, haunted house, old dark house films.
Definitely. But I have not seen The Unseen, unfortunately. But now with this new scan that Imprint have done, I'm really looking forward to it.
So I can tell you a little bit about The Uninvited. So
please do.
Yeah, it was out in 1944. As we've all confirmed, it is a must-see ghost film. It's based on Dorothy McArdle's novel Uneasy Freehold from 1941. And both the film and the book plays out as this very traditional ghost story that is beautiful in its subtlety when we compare it to modern horror and kind of jump scares and shock and, you know, CGI and all these things. It's just wonderfully simple yet effective. But at the time it was made, it was actually extremely direct in its approach, as is Dorothy McArdle's novel. So the audience is confronted directly with the ghost, and there's no question as to if the supernatural exists in this story. It most definitely does. The ghostly effects in this film are just wonderful too. I'm not sure if it's animation or a double exposure of some sort, but it reminds me of the spirit photography from the 19th century. I know you guys would definitely remember that ghostly effect. Does that stand out in your mind?
Oh, definitely.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
One of things I remember.
And that was like a very different thing for audiences to be confronted kind of face to face with a ghost. And this effect was apparently censored in Britain, if you can believe that.
What?
Yeah. So wow. I couldn't find that much information about it. Maybe there'll be a lot more in the extras, but I read it was apparently censored.
It was very effective and, like, you know, obviously pre-CGI, but quite a convincing effect, like the way they did it. It's pretty amazing for, you know, for the time. So
even watching it now after many watches, it still kind of gives me, like, you know, goosebumps and chills. That's why this film is just so effective in its simplicity. So this censoring, I'm not sure if it's because it's too scary, if the censors thought, oh, that's too scary, but I thought that it possibly could be because the suggestion of life after death was actually considered heretical. So, for example, the Church of England cemeteries would not allow certain phrases on monuments that indicated life after death or spiritualist ideas. So maybe the censors kind of thought it was in some way irreligious with that in mind. That's all I can think of.
No, yeah, because I remember a document, it was on, you know, the censors in the UK, and at that time they were super strict, obviously, but they did get advice of the church if they were, you know, rating a film or something. So maybe it was the church went, no, this is too much or something. It probably obviously is more religious rather than, you know, censorship. Yeah.
And I mean, it seems so tame now by modern standards. Yet, I mean, you can see someone hacked up, chainsawed, you know, everything the imagination could possibly conceive, you know, for the body to be dissected in gory ways in horror films these days. Yet this still manages to give you chills, and just the idea of it and this ghost really does. Yeah, I guess there would have been this kind of blasphemous, you know, connotation to this idea of being confronted so directly by a ghost. And, you know, it's just so direct and it's so apparent.
Yep. I was just going to say, it looks better than anything, you know, say, you know, something, you know, 50 years later, like the Haunting remake. It just looks terrible. Oh, yes. The ghost, like, I mean, that's it just shows, like, you don't need, like, you can just do, like, practical effects and overlaying. It's just, it's so much more effective. But yeah, I just want to
say. Yeah, you know the old saying, less is more.
Yes
definitely.
That's exactly what it's like, as you just said, John, with the Haunting remake. Okay, That was not good. Let's admit it. But some of the visual effects were okay, but it was a little overdone, as you said.
Too much CG.
But, right. But the original Haunting that came out in 1963, there was hardly any effects whatsoever, and it worked perfectly.
More effective. Mm. Yep. Less you see. Yep. Absolutely.
So, I mean, this differs a bit from that in that it does have a mystery to unravel, but it's not a psychological horror. And it doesn't suggest that the supernatural may be a figment of the mind, nor does it actually explain away the supernatural occurrences as we see in many films and actually traditional supernatural fiction. That's usually the case. We're working with psychology and is it in the mind, and we're never quite sure, or by the end we get like a Scooby-Doo ending. And this is not the case here, which is why it might have been a bit confronting or a bit of a worry for the censors, because that's the tendency, even with, you know, stuff like Turn of the Screw and all these other things and Edgar Allan Poe, it was psychological, whereas this is like in your face, this is a ghost. So it's just an unashamed ghost story. And even when belief in the supernatural is called into question, our main character reminds us that many people believe in spiritualism and the existence of life after death and ghosts, so it even kind of alleviates that in the film, which is interesting. It really sets it apart from most other supernatural stuff, definitely of that time. So, and even today, yeah.
Definitely.
And, I mean, this is what I actually like so much about this film. It just makes it so unique. And if you, you know, if you do kind of like the idea of believing in ghosts, or if you do believe in ghosts, it's just satisfying. It gives you the extra chills. So do you believe in ghosts?
Sounds like deja vu from our previous episode. Do you
believe? That was witches, Tony. This yes, is ghosts.
Do I believe in ghosts? Actually, for ghosts, I actually do believe in ghosts, yes.
Yeah, I do as well. Yeah, I think there's too many, coincidences or eerie things that occur in life. So, yeah, I definitely do. I think so. And sometimes we've all had experiences where we've felt some sort of presence. So I don't know, maybe you haven't, but sometimes when we're younger as well. So, yeah, definitely, I think there is definitely something otherworldly there.
So with that in mind, that probably makes this film for you more potent. You kind of buy into it and believe it really gives you that feeling.
Yeah it definitely does. Yeah And that's because like I said, when it comes to horror, you know, I say it all the time, like, you know, same with Tony, you know, we've seen everything, you know, like I said, I've seen the most goriest of goriest horror films, but the only thing that gets under my skin is, yes, sort of supernatural, or if it's done effectively, that can really really unnerved me, because I, you know, there is some bit of belief for myself, definitely.
It's the beauty of this film, definitely. And for all those skeptics out there, it seems like a very simple story, just a simple ghost story, but in fact it's actually very sophisticated. It fools the viewer with stereotypes and preconceived notions. And the audience's own judgments when our ghostly rivals don't turn out to be who we thought they were. So it's really interesting how it uses bias and preconceived notions to kind of turn the tables. And I won't spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen it, but that will become apparent once you watch it. And Dorothy McArdle was Irish, of course, and as a young woman grew up in this very tumultuous time for Europe. She was a fierce advocate for the Irish Republic, anti-fascism, and women's equality. In 1937, when the new Irish constitution was instated, she believed it to be a betrayal of the promise to grant greater gender equality in Ireland, as it focused on the role of women as being motherhood and in the home. So motherhood is a strong theme in her book and in this film. So when you watch it, you can keep that in mind. Both certainly crush the idea of motherhood being revered and glorified, because in reality, as in this film, not all mothers are good. And domestic life is not romanticized and the blissful state as it's often made out to be. It's actually quite the opposite in many cases, as we see in this film. And marriage is another state treated with cynicism in the story. It depicts this very dysfunctional marriage. And I think it's no mistake that all of our characters in this film are single and happy, which was a bit of a misnomer for the time, because there was this idea, especially for women, that happiness could be found through marriage and children, and that was the only kind of way you could find satisfaction and happiness in life, which of course we know is not true. There's many ways people can have that same satisfaction and happiness. And at the end, when all of our characters seem as though they're going to live happily ever after, having found the promise of wedded bliss, it almost feels as though this is a little piece of black humour mocking the traditional happily ever after. You just wonder, are they destined to come back as angry ghosts after having these really shitty marriages? And even though Roderick narrates the tale, he's actually really just in orbit around all these women who lead the plot and resolve problems. So is Dorothy's source material maybe suggesting that if women were given more space to lead and negotiate, that conflicts and problems could be more peacefully resolved with this greater intuition and empathy that she's kind of indicating that women have through this communication with the ghosts and with the spirit world, that maybe, you know, the women kind of work it out and they can understand what these ghosts want and they realise there's a problem and that has to be resolved. Could that translate to the real world? Dorothy, having lived through World War One, World War Two, and the Irish Civil War, knowing that, that really frames this film in this light and certainly gives this idea of women as negotiators a lot more weight. And that is possibly one of the themes of the novel and movie that comes through. But apart from the politics, it is a genuinely enjoyable ghost story. It's based in the tradition of Gothic romance and melodrama. And after the success of Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca in 1940, studios were looking for more Gothic fiction like this to option. So we see a great influx of this genre in the 1940s and the early 50s. Gothic novels were massively popular at this time, with Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca selling at least 3 million copies alone. Other authors in the genre, like Victoria Holt, sold over 100 million books between numerous pseudonyms. So the popularity and influence of the Gothic romance or romance novel cannot be understated, even though it's often disregarded as whimsical women's stuff and quite light and not very important and whatever. That's totally not true. It made a massive impact. Obviously, women found themselves heavily represented in stories like this. And Dorothy McArdle's stories show us that they could be political and meaningful if you just peer below the surface. So that's just a bit of an insight into this story that maybe at first just seems like this quite light Gothic ghost story. So there you go. I'm not sure if you'd keyed on to any of those things, but that's what I kind of found out and took from it.
I guess I do key into those sort of things as well.
Yeah, I didn't, because like I said, it's been a while since I've seen it, but yeah, a lot of that I obviously missed first time around, but because I remember being effective. But yeah, like we said, when we discussed Burn Witch Burn, that's another sort of more intelligent sort of, that was obviously witchcraft, but this is a ghost story. But yeah, it's much, much more intelligent than, what some people may give credit for, just being a throwaway sort of ghost movie when it's not. It's a lot more than that.
Definitely. And I've not seen The Unseen, I don't think. Like I said, I can't really remember. But that was also based on a book, Midnight House, by Ethel Lena White. It's generally viewed or was kind of billed as a sequel to The Uninvited, but it really doesn't have much to do with The Uninvited. It's likely that Paramount was probably trying to capitalize on the success of The Uninvited because it was very successful. Mm. So The Unseen does have some similar key elements, like optioning another gothic novel and utilizing the same director, Lewis Allen, and we've got Gail Russell returning. It's another old dark house mystery. It apparently has traces of Turn of the Screw and Gaslight and those kind of stories. So I think they were just trying to bring out something with what they thought was a winning formula. But it's as they're meant to be, this kind of linked series of films, it's just fantastic that we have them here together. And The Unseen especially, I think, is really unseen. Generally, yeah, you know, like it's a hard one to kind of see in the past. So, yeah, quite interesting. Obviously, The Uninvited, from all accounts, is the superior movie, but this is just that kind of curiosity added on with some really interesting extras, I might add. I'm really looking forward to some of them. How about you guys?
Yeah,
the extras look great. There's especially commentator with Alan K. Road. He's the authority on film noir, so this one will definitely be really good to hear when once it's released.
Did I hear you mention there's a Kat Ellinger? I'm just having a look.
Yes,
That'll be great. That's for The Uninvited. That's going to be amazing. She's like the perfect person to talk about that film. So I can't wait to see that.
Mm, definitely.
And the other one was The Career of Gail Russell. That will probably be interesting.
Yeah. Imogen Sarah Smith, she's done a lot of noirs type extras on old classic films on Criterion releases and whatnot. So really amazing to listen to. So I'm very, very keen on that extra.
And Gail Russell had a very tragic life. I don't know if you know about that.
No, I did.
Well, I mean, she's so beautiful and she's very young.
I know she died young. Yeah.
I think she was just 36 when she died. And the poor thing, I don't think she wanted to be an actress, but it came about because of her beauty and her look, and she kind of got pushed into it because, of course, they made so much money that you couldn't really refuse, and her family seemed to have a lot of say in her, you know, having this career when she really wanted to do something else. And she was maybe not cut out for it. She was apparently very nervous, and very nervous on the set of The Uninvited. I don't know if it was her first film. It was definitely one of the first. But there was accounts of her, the poor thing, bursting into tears on set. You know, she was so nervous and kind of so intimidated and maybe out of her depth. And by that time, she was already drinking heavily and then had this lifelong drinking problem. It's absolutely tragic. And she died so young. So,
jeez. And yeah. She would have been young in the Uninvited, maybe, I don't know, 20 or 18, or who knows. Like, she wouldn't have been that old, yeah.
I don't think she's more than 20, but I think we'll find out more in that, you know.
That's going to be a fascinating listen.
Yeah, so that's why I'm intrigued about that one, just from when I was reading about this film, reading about her, I was quite shocked.
And you've answered the question I was going to ask you then, if it's like a sequel, The Unseen, but it kind of is, just in name only and sort of cast. But that kind of clears that up, because I wasn't too sure if this was like a direct, you know, follow-up. But, yeah, it seems like it's not.
They build it.
Spiritual sequel, I guess.
Yes, good way of putting it.
Yeah. That is a good way of putting it, spiritual sequel.
And there's been, and I had a look around, and it looks like The Unseen. You're right, Suzanne, there's been no, like, There's a lot of grey market DVDs. Like, there hasn't been any sort of proper release of it. So, yeah, this is going to be a real treat to get both of them.
I've seen the grey market DVD around, but I think I was always a bit confused. Oh, is this just The Uninvited with another name? And because it was a grey market DVD, I wasn't sure what's going on here, you know. So it's the kind of DVD that you find in newsagents.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember seeing it locally. I remember, the little fake rating logo and I was going to say the artwork. This looks amazing, beautiful. This box set, the artwork, just some classic poster art on the box. Looks beautiful.
Well, this film definitely worthy of this, you know, wonderful package.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt about it. Okay, now for the next title, Suzanne, would you like to announce the next title?
Of course, we have imprint title number 315, and that is Woman Who Came Back. It's a worldwide first on Blu-ray. And this chilling story of witchcraft stars Academy Award nominated actress Nancy Kelly from The Bad Seed, John Loder, and Otto Kruger. A woman believes she is bewitched and goes to the ancestral family home. The villagers soon begin to think that she too is victim to the spell cast on her family for centuries. It's limited to 1,500 copies only. And for the extras, we have special features and technical specs, 1080p high definition presentation on Blu-ray, from a new 2023 4K restoration of the original nitrate negative. We have a new audio commentary by film scholar Kelly Robinson, new portraits of the past, David Huckvale on Woman Who Came Back, new video essay by author Joseph Dwyer, theatrical trailer, Audio English LPCM 2.0 mono, original aspect ratio 1.371, optional English hard of hearing subtitles. Has anyone seen this film?
No.
No, not one I've seen either.
I've not either, and I could find out very little about this film. Yet it really appeals to me.
It sounds like sort of like a Rebecca type film, just based on the premise. More dealing with maybe curses of supernatural. So yeah, just I can't believe it flew under my radar.
Witches, our favourite topic.
Yes.
So it's a Republic Pictures Poverty Row supernatural about witches, apparently. It's described as shadowy and eerie, reminiscent of Val Lewton films. So I'm sold. You had me at Witches. You had me at Nancy Kelly from The Bad Seed, because that is another fantastic early horror film. So,
I adore The Bad Seed. I love The Bad Seed. Such a
great one.
Definitely. Yeah, I thought sort of thinking Val Lewton as well when I heard it, kind of like Cat People or something, just sort of the premise, except with witches. So yeah, it sounds fascinating. So yeah, a bunch of great extras to accompany it. So yeah, I'll definitely be checking out this one as soon as I get the bundle.
So I'm excited. I'm sold on this whole bundle. I know nothing about this film, but it looks wonderful.
Great. Yeah. Great poster. I was just saying great artwork too.
Oh yeah. Fantastic.
Oh, how about one more, Suzanne? Would you want to do the next title as well?
Sure, we have imprint title number 316, and that is The Queen of Spades. Alexander Pushkin's terrifying ghost story comes to life in The Queen of Spades, directed by the acclaimed Thorold Dickinson. An elderly countess strikes a bargain with the devil and exchanges her soul for the ability to always win at cards. An army officer, who is also a fanatic about cards, murders her for the secret, then finds himself haunted by the woman's spirit. This stunning film is one of the few true classics of supernatural cinema. And that is a quote from Martin Scorsese. So this is another Martin-approved supernatural horror film. It's limited to 1,500 copies only. And for our special features and technical specs, 1080p high definition presentation on Blu-ray from a 4K restoration of the original nitrate negative. New audio commentary by critic and film historian Pamela Hutchinson. Audio commentary by film historian Nick Pinkerton. Introduction by Martin Scorsese. Anna Bukuteska plays the Queen of Spades. The Nightmare People, Thorold Dickinson on Saturday Night at the Movies. Analysis of the Queen of Spades by Philip Horn. Audio interview with Thorold Dickinson from 1951. Audio interview with Thorold Dickinson, 1968. Behind the scenes, stills gallery, original trailer, Audio English LPCM 2.0 mono, original aspect ratio 1.371, optional English subtitles. Well, I have to say, this is another one of my favourite movies. Have you seen it?
Nope. And after hearing that Martin Scorsese quote, why didn't you screen that as a double? Why didn't they screen that as a double feature with The Uninvited? Because that was, this looks and sounds amazing. I really can't believe I haven't seen it. I'm actually really excited for this one. John, have you seen the Queen of Spades?
No, another one that's completely flown past me. I remember kind of there was, I think, a UK Blu-ray announced a while ago. I think Studio Canal or something put out, but I just didn't think it was supernatural. I didn't know what it was about. I just thought it was just maybe a melodrama or something, but hearing the description, I'm on board as well. So yeah, one I just flew under my radar as well.
Well, I adore this film. I absolutely love it so much. I have that Blu-ray release that you mentioned. I'm sorry, I just can't remember who released it at the moment. But the minute I saw it announced, I ordered it because this film, I just rate it so highly. It's very underseen. It's very underrated. It was actually thought to be lost for a very long time, until some elements surfaced, I think possibly around 2009. Therefore, we luckily get this opportunity to be able to see this absolutely brilliant film. I know some people do think that it's a melodrama and a bit of a kind of historical drama slash gothic melodrama. So maybe haven't rated it as highly because they're expecting some kind of horror, but the horror in this is entirely supernatural and entirely what lies underneath what we're seeing. It's a stunning film and there's just so much to it. So I can tell you a little bit about it. Director Thorold Dickinson, he, of course, directed The British Gaslight from 1940, which is considered another masterpiece of the Gothic cinema, and it came out before the American one that many people are familiar with. And if you think about Gaslight, you kind of know what to expect from The Queen of Spades. It's another Gothic melodrama set in this world of shadowy menace and intrigue. As I said, a very stunning movie. It has very considered direction, but it also has a supernatural element that is subtle and effective, where the supernatural elements are not discounted by the end of the film. And we also see this in The Uninvited, as we talked about. It's an unashamed supernatural story that just confronts you with what's happening. There are some psychological elements. Maybe there is a little bit of space to interpret it as psychological, but it is in essence a supernatural story. The look, premise and atmosphere of this film is absolutely delicious. It is set in a snow-veiled Tsarist Russia, St. Petersburg, to be exact, the former capital in 1801 when this film is set. And it has this very moody intensity and darkness that brings to mind the looming shadowy world of Val Lewton, Jean Cocteau and expressionist cinema. There's some moments that are expressionist cinema, basically, are influenced by that. It has a very oppressive, somber tone. It's, of course, based upon the novel by Alexander Pushkin and, in essence, is a Faustian tale of selling one's soul to the devil for worldly gain. The story revolves around Herman, a lowly captain of engineers in the Imperial Army who is frustrated with the elevation of aristocratic gentlemen above him and feels stifled by the class system. Given that this is set in 1801, shortly after the French Revolution, there are strong revolutionist rumblings in this film. And of course, this is pertinent to Russia's Great Revolution, which began in 1917. So the theme of class is certainly an undercurrent in this film and a very strong one. Herman is played by Anton Walbrook, who was also in Gaslight, but in 1948 had also appeared in another Faustian tale, the absolutely classic The Red Shoes, of which I know, Tony, you're a huge fan. And in that, he is an earthly stand-in for Faust. So you love The Red Shoes, don't you, Tony?
More than anything, one of my favorite British films of the 40s.
I love it too.
I thought you were going to say more than life itself, and I would completely understand that. No. Well, you get another amazing, intense performance in this film, and if you like this film, you'll love this film. The themes are very similar. Of course, that's based on an old fairy folk tale. So in this film, his character longs for wealth and power, and all of these things that he believes are denied to him by his social class. He discovers this rare occult book in a bookstore that is excellent. You just want to visit this bookstore if you're into books. But this book recounts the tale of people who have successfully sold their souls, including one of my favourite historical characters, Count de Saint-Germain, the adventurer and occultist who was reputedly immortal, having gained immortality through alchemy. And there are many recorded sightings of him dating from the early 1700s right through to the 1970s. And I just want to stress, he is a real historical figure with whom this legend is associated, and he is reportedly immortal. So that's one of the great unsolved mysteries that, you know, you'd see it on that show with like Leonard Nimoy, you know, the immortal man, that's that guy. So he's in this story. And in this story, Count de Saint-Germain has coerced the once beautiful Countess Ranevska to sell her soul for the secret of the cards. But she's now an old woman and is haunted by this diabolical secret. And Countess Ranevskaya's story was rumoured to be based on the real historical figure, Princess Natalia Petrovna Golinsnya, who was said to have obtained the secret of the cards from the Count de Saint-Germain in real life. Herman becomes determined to pry this secret from the old countess in order to win at cards and make his fortune, but in doing so becomes tormented by supernatural forces. It's a coincidence that in our last episode about Night of the Eagle, which I recommend you listen to, I talked about the role of cards and their association with divination and the devil, and this is another major theme in this film, and I can use my Saint Bernard quote once again. He said in medieval Italy that cards were the game through which the devil most triumphed, And he certainly does in this film. Thus, in the Queen of Spades, cards are the conduit of the devil, but also the means through which Herman believes he can divine and forge his future. So they have that double meaning there, that they foretell and they forge. And the art of predicting the future through the use of cards is, of course, known as cartomancy and has been practiced for centuries, if not thousands of years. And within this art, the Queen of Spades represents a powerful, intelligent woman like Countess Ramnevskaya, who is the living manifestation of the card. And like the Queen of Spades in folklore, she has also sold her soul. So the card is associated with selling the soul, and that's what the Countess does in this film. So it's all linked to the cards. The whole film kind of revolves around these cards. And the card is also associated with intuition and predicting the future. She knows the mysteries of the universe, so can be consulted to give guidance to those seeking insight into their own lives, which is what Herman does by going to the Countess. But she also has a dark side and is associated with death. So those who cross her will not go unpunished, as we see in this film. And interestingly, the card is also traditionally associated with power and authority. And in this film, it's the aristocrats, the class system, the authority, the institutions oppressing Herman and the common people who we see in the background begging in the streets. So that is what the card represents as well, this repressive class system and institutions that just crush people, and it's like a prison of class. So we've got all that happening in this film. So you're all going to get a real treat seeing this one. You're going to love it.
Can't wait.
Absolutely. I can't wait to check it out. I've always liked sort of films that deal with selling to the devil or selling a soul. There's a number of interesting films that blend the genres too. Like Imprint released a noir, Alias Nick Beale. Yeah, and you go in expecting a noir, and it turns into a selling your soul type movie,
It was not like a noir at all. But that was probably one of my favorite titles from the first collection of the Essential Noir collection from Imprint. That movie just blew me away when I first saw it.
Surprised me greatly. Yeah, and it sounds fascinating, Suzanne, especially the use of the card. I'm just trying to think of other films. What's Devil and Daniel Webster? It's another.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Quite common tale. Needful Things. There's a number of them, and they all have their own different take on the subject. But this sounds like a real classic, taking it from an older perspective in terms of literature. So I'm very excited to see this one. Yeah, I can't believe I'd kind of skip past me.
I'm like you, Joe. I can't believe I haven't even seen it. But now with this release, I can't wait.
Yeah, if I know, and it was more of a, because like I said, there was a Blu-ray. I think it was a UK one or something. But yeah, the cover looked like some queen on the cover. So I just thought it was some sort of old melodrama. So I kind of avoided it. But if I know what it was, I would have seen it. But thankfully, it's come along at a good time.
Yes. Alrighty, my turn now to do some narration, and you, Suzanne, you can have a bit of a break.
Yes, thank you, Suzanne.
Alrighty, up next is Imprint release number 317, Catacombs, The Woman Who Wouldn't Die. This is a worldwide first on Blu-ray. The dead return from the grave in this cult classic horror based on the 1959 novel by Jay Bennett. An astute businesswoman is completely devoted to her faithless husband, who must kill her to carry on with her pretty young niece. It turns out that the dead don't die so easily. This is limited to 1,500 copies only. Special features and technical specs include a 1080p high-definition presentation on Blu-ray from a new 2023 4K restoration of the original nitrate negative, a new audio commentary by authors Jonathan Rigby and Kevin Lyons, new Mero and Merrill interview with actress Jane Mero, a new The Glynn Miller Story interview with continuity girl Renee Glynn and sound editor Colin Miller, new Martelli and Martell interview with composer Carlo Martelli, photo gallery, theatrical trailer, audio LPCM 2.0 mono, original aspect ratio of 1:66:1, and optional English hard of hearing subtitles. Now, this is a title I have not seen nor heard of, actually. With a premise like that, oh boy, can't wait to watch it. This month is just incredible. May is just incredible. Really can't wait to see this one. Suzanne, have you seen Catacombs?
I haven't, but I've seen the poster. I love the poster, and I just love they've used it for this. It's just great cover art, really striking.
It is a very striking poster. I love it, the cover art in particular. John, have you seen Catacombs?
No, I have not. It's one that I'm aware of. I've seen we did get a local DVD, actually, of this, but I never picked it up, you know, years ago. But yeah, it sounds, just when I see like a really great sort of gothic British sort of horror film of the 60s, which kind of, once again, not to go back to it, but would make a nice pairing with, you know, Burn Witch Burn, just based on sort of the premise. They sound very similar. The two would make a nice double by the looks of it. But yeah, one I just haven't seen. But yeah, you know, once again, ton of great extras to give some context on it as well.
Yeah.
I had a quick look. The cover for that local release was so crap.
Oh, it's awful.
It's not surprising that people overlooked this film, whereas had they used this original cover art, people would have known, oh, this is a kind of horror movie, thriller, whatever. It looks a bit exciting. But, yeah, the cover art used here was the most awful kind of Photoshop-y stuff.
And really bad 2000s Photoshop. It's a shocker.
No idea what it was about, what's going on, you know.
Someone in a car or something at the front. Yeah, it's terrible. Yes. Just use the skull. Like, yeah, because I remember seeing this DVD years ago and just saying, it's okay. I remember seeing it in JB a few times, but I just, never picked it up for obvious reasons. So.
And especially considering it's directed by Gordon Hessler, and he's like, you know, done so much fantastic horror. Like, he's done Poe stuff, The Oblong Box, Cry of the Banshee. He's done Scream, Scream Again, Murders in the Rue Morgue. He did The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, which is just a fantastic, beautiful film. And he also did one of my favourites, Pray for Death, with Shoka Sugi. So, I mean, how could you pass that up? How could you give that a crap cover? Like, how could you give that guy, like, a crap cover?
I know. It's,
That doesn't even look like a horror film.
No, you don't even know what it is. It's terrible. And if they just use the skull, it's a beautiful piece of art, you know. Such just a wasted opportunity. It makes you wonder, once again, just marketing people just having no idea. Probably haven't even seen the movie that put these covers together during that time.
Definitely, yeah. But I did have a bit of a, look around on the internet, at this film and watch a little trailer. And it looks like, so Georgina Cookson, she gives this Elizabeth Taylor level Taming of the Shrew performance as this diabolical, nasty wife. And because she's rich, she controls all the money and she makes her husband basically this subservient slave and orders him to her bedroom to satisfy her and stuff. Like, what I saw just looked just like fabulous. She's like, go upstairs and, you know, this, that, whatever. So that just looked fabulous. And he's this downtrodden husband, he starts to sleaze around his wife's young niece, and they begin an affair. And this is when the wife says, you know, she caught them kissing, "You get upstairs and make me forget what I just saw." Like, you know, it's like fabulously kind of like camp kind of as well.
Mm.
But her poor husband and this young lady that he started the affair with, they hatch a complicated plot to do away with this old broad. But as the American title suggests, death is only the beginning, because his wife apparently dabbled in some Eastern esoteric beliefs and might be back from the grave to make them sorry. So, yeah, it just looks like an absolute blast from what I saw. So, it looks like a thriller horror with some intrigue and a bit of hagsploitation happening there. It's got a bit of that vibe as well with the evil older woman.
Yeah, and then the US title was... Oh, sorry, there's a number of titles being a bigger film. The other one's The Woman Who Wouldn't Die, which makes sense as well. So, yeah, it's a number of... it sounds like a blast. Just mix of genres and, yeah, and a mix of talent as well, because, you know, the set designer did you know, a number of British films, prestigious films as well. George Provis, yeah, the director as well, great director. So, yeah, just very, very keen. Check this out.
I'm excited for this too. It's just an exciting month.
Yeah.
Can say that again. Two more titles to go, and I'll read this one. The next title is imprint release number 318, The Man Who Haunted Himself. Roger Moore stars in this beloved psychological thriller, which is a macabre twist on Jekyll and Hyde. Harold Pelham, partner in a large electronics firm, finds himself in some bewildering circumstances after recovering from a near-fatal car accident. A strange force seems to be reshaping his life. Why does he renounce his high business principles? And why does Julie, an attractive girl he has seen only once, claim such an intimate relationship? Writer and director Basil Dearden's final film is based on the 1957 novel The Strange Case of Mr. Pelham by Anthony Armstrong. Includes new and archival special features, plus an exclusive insert reproduction of the original press book. This is limited to 1,500 copies only. Special features and technical specs include a 1080p high-definition presentation on Blu-ray, an audio commentary by actor Roger Moore, and uncredited writer-producer Brian Forbes, moderated by journalist Jonathan Sothcott. New audio commentary by authors Jonathan Rigby and Kevin Lyons. A new interview with Roger Moore biographer Gareth Owen. Roger Moore, A Matter of Class documentary. Alfred Hitchcock presents The Case of Mr. Pelham, a 1955 episode of the series based on the original novel The Strange Case of Mr. Pelham, standard definition. It also includes an isolated score audio track, theatrical trailer, photo gallery, reproduction of the original press book, audio LPCM 2.0 mono, aspect ratio of 1:75:1, optional English hard of hearing subtitles. Now, I have not seen this one, but I have seen the Hitchcock episode, The Case of Mr. Pelham. I actually kind of remember it now after hearing the reading the synopsis. And it was a good episode, very short, as they all were, 25 minutes. And I did like that one. But this movie, it intrigues me because I love Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That's probably one of my favorite stories from Robert Louis Stevenson. And, of course, my all-time favorite Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde version of the movie is, of course, the 1931 Reuben Mamoulian film with Frederick March. That is probably, hands down, the best version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. John, have you seen The Man Who Haunted Himself?
I have, yes. I saw it a long time ago. It's been many years. Once again, I think, yeah, just because there was that Jekyll and Hyde sort of connection to it. I can't remember why I ended up watching it, but I recall liking it visually. I remember it being quite colorful, like quite vivid, a lot of reds and blues, and when he obviously changed to the other character, and Roger Moore, like from memory, it was a really good performance, Roger Moore. I mean, this is pre James Bond, I believe, and it's quite a dramatic role for him in this, and you wouldn't sort of kind of suspect it, you know, obviously being more associated with James Bond and other sort of films like, you know, The Wild Geese and whatnot. So yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but yeah, over 10 years, maybe even longer. But yeah, I do recall enjoying it, but yeah, I look forward to giving it a rewatch and yeah, giving it another second go.
Awesome. Suzanne, have you seen The Man Who Haunted Himself?
I haven't, but it looks great, and I've read about it a bit now, and, you know, it's meant to be fantastic, this kind of psychological thriller with supernatural elements. And I saw it's directed by Basil Dearden, and he directed Dead of Night, and he also directed another one of my favourite films, Saraband for Dead Lovers, which is a historical romance melodrama. So as soon as I saw that he directed that, I was like, oh wow, you know, I have to see this, because that's an absolutely beautiful film. This is obviously a very different kind of film, but I did see Roger Moore said that he considered this his favorite role and his best performance. And it's actually considered by many people to be one of his best non-Bond roles. He apparently gives an absolutely fantastic performance, as you mentioned, John. Mm. And
yeah,
there's actually a really creepy synchronicity about this film, which borders on the supernatural, just to make it a bit more eerie and make this month even more eerie. It's actually quite tragic that director Basil Dearden passed away shortly after the film was made, and he actually died in a car crash in the same location as a character dies in this film. Yeah, that can go into the cursed, creepy movies, you know, Hall of Fame. So yeah, that's a really strange synchronicity about this film. And just to be more ironic, stills from this film were actually used in advertising in the UK for road safety, urging people to wear their seat belts.
Jeez. Yeah, that's a very freaky coincidence. Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah, did not know that. Speaking of the supernatural, geez.
Yeah, this month gets spookier and spookier.
You can say that again.
It does. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but yeah, this looks like a total winner with that unusual kind of history behind it in retrospect.
Yeah, it definitely does. And yeah, like I said, I just remember more being like dramatic and angry in parts and when he changes. And yeah, it's really dramatic. And you just, and unfortunately, a lot of Bonds got typecast, you know, once they became James Bond, it was kind of hard to shake that off. You know, Connery obviously, you know, tried to with films, you know, get an imprint release like the Sidney Lumet film and whatnot. But they still had that kind of Bond, kind of like, you know, superhero actors, they kind of get typecast certain actors. So yeah, it's but yeah, to see Roger Moore, it's in a very different role and dramatic and yeah, quite eerie, then yeah, it's definitely recommended.
Alrighty, we're up to the last title now. John, would you like to read the last title?
Yes, so we have Black Moon. This is imprint number 319 and this is from 1934. So the forgotten 30s voodoo horror is a thrilling piece of cinema ripe for rediscovery in the special release through both original black and white and tinted version of the film. After dabbling in voodoo on the island of St. Christopher as a child, Joanneth Lane now finds herself powerless to resist the spell as an adult. She returns to the island to try to exercise the hold that voodoo has taken upon her life. However, once there, Juanita falls ever deeper under the spell of the voodoo drums. Starring Jack Holt, Faye Ray, and Dorothy Burgess. All right, so we have a 1080p high definition presentation on Blu-ray, original black and white version, the tinted version, theatrical trailer, audio PLPCM 2.0 mono, original aspect ratio 1.331, and original optional English HOH subtitles. This looks great. I have not seen this film. Once again, it says forgotten. So yeah, I it's one that completely flew under my radar. You know, I love a good voodoo film, or I guess zombie film, if you say, like 1930s zombie or something like White Zombie, the sort of jungle, supernatural, exotic horror films of the 30s. This, you know, or something like Island of Lost Souls. This looks fantastic. So, yeah, one I haven't seen, but it's right up my alley. You know, I said I like the genre, and yeah, very, very intrigued. Tony, have you seen this one, Black Moon?
No, I haven't. As you just said earlier, John, it does have similarities to the Island of Lost Souls, as well as White Zombie with Lugosi, absolutely. And of course, it stars the infamous Faye Ray, who everyone knows from King Kong.
Yes.
I have not seen it, and I love these voodoo type movies. Like there was a movie that I believe Val Lewton produced. I Walk with a Zombie, I believe. It feels like it has that kind of theme as well. And I'm really, this does look good. I really am looking forward to it. But yeah. I'm going to ask, are you a fan of tinted films? Are you a fan of tinted colors, or do you prefer the original black and white?
I prefer black and white, but it depends if it was presented tinted, you know, at some stage in its history, I'll watch it. But yeah, black and white is always preferable.
Yeah, black and white's always preferable for me as well. Suzanne, have you seen Black Moon?
I haven't, but it looks like a real treat. I love this kind of pre-code horror. I saw it's directed by Roy William Neal, and he's apparently been directing since 1917.
Jeez.
And yes, he's directed so many films if you go look at his filmography. A very notable one is Universal's Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. So we've probably all seen that one.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Yes, I'm excited to see a Faye Ray film. This is just a great era of films, and especially these kind of horror films. They're always visually amazing and really interesting. And I thought the same. It looks in the vein of White Zombie. And this actually foreshadowed Val Lewton's I Walked with a Zombie, apparently. So it's quite a few years before that came out, but it had some, you know, kind of links with that between this early period of these kind of zombie voodoo films and things to that. So it was also apparently one of the last films ever released before the Hays Code was implemented. So it missed out by 2 weeks, and had it been delayed or come out, you know, finished 2 weeks later, it probably would have been heavily censored. And we wouldn't have seen it in this form. So it just slid in there as one of the very last pre-code films. Certainly, possibly the last pre-code horror film, I'm not sure. But it was Scream Queen Faye Ray's final horror movie as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was the last of her horror movies.
Yeah, because she was in King Kong, obviously classic, and I believe The Most Dangerous Game as well, which isn't that too. That was sort of a collaboration of the that cast that did King Kong, obviously made that film as well. So yeah, this is looks and fascinating to hear it's one of the last pre-codes. So it just makes you wonder what films could have been if there was no code, because they were getting more raunchier and more sort of fascinating and grittier with the subject matter. So kind of reset things backwards. But yeah, that's an interesting little tidbit there.
It is a very interesting tidbit.
What wonderful poster art as well. Absolutely wonderful. Just this era of poster art. It just really makes you want to see it. And I just, it's very vivid and very dynamic.
It's beautiful. Once again, these pre-code posters, just amazing. So I'm glad they kept the artwork. So yeah, looks even the inside artwork too looks beautiful on the inside sleeve. Just suits it perfectly.
It does. Well, this is the end of the May announcement. Sorry, and just a refresher. The titles are The Unseen and the Uninvited, Woman Who Came Back, The Queen of Spades, Catacombs, The Man Who Haunted Himself, and Black Moon. This bundle is available to pre-order now, and the release date is May 29, 2024. My goodness, this month was definitely gothic / ghosts / hauntings. There's a lot of great horror elements in this month, and it was absolutely incredible. I know, Suzanne, you praised this month. I remember when it was announced, I messaged you straight away. Look at the bundle right now.
And I was not disappointed. Yeah, it's all these old, like, classic, older horror movies. We've got this, like, amazing legacy of horror from, this Black Moon 1934 through the 40s to the 60s. It's just unreal, and like a lot of these are lost, forgotten, underrated, and of course with two of my favourites, The Uninvited, which I'm sure many, many people are familiar with this film.
Yeah.
If you're not, as I said, check it out. If you like a black and white horror film, if you like these 40s, ghost films or anything ghost, you'll love it. But I am absolutely thrilled that we're getting a release here of The Queen of Spades. I just absolutely love this film. I think it's just so massively underrated. I'm absolutely just delighted with this one. But the whole month is just excellent. It's wonderfully themed. And I do pick and choose which releases I buy. I'm not a completist. I have certain films and genres that I'm interested in, but this is one of the months where I am buying everything. I'm buying the bundle. I need everything. So, if you're a horror fan, this is just a good one, especially if you like the old horror films.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a month that, Imprinter, once again, thinking outside the box, they're presenting horror, but a different type of horror, sort of older ones, like you said, Suzanne, you summed up perfectly, a bit of everything from every decade. Sort of eerie, gothic, supernatural, voodoo, it's a whole mix of everything. So a bit of a taster for all types of genres. This is, I'm very excited that this month has arrived in May. It seems like, almost it could be a Halloween bundle, but we're being treated in May, so this is a great month. So for those who I see on groups and stuff sometimes complain, oh, there's not enough horror, well, here you go. This whole month should keep you happy in terms of the horror genre.
Mysterious May or Mystic that's, May
that's perfect. Yes, that's
one. Yes,
Mystic May bundle, I should call it.
Mystical May. So
Mystical May.
Done. Yeah, and if you didn't believe in ghosts before May, you will after May.
Yes.
You'll be looking over your shoulder. You'll be wondering, what's that shadow in the corner?
Oh man, it's amazing. I can't wait for this bundle. Well, it looks like it's the end of episode number 39. And as always, thank you to our wonderful guest, Suzanne, as always, our local film witch who loves these movies. And of course, these are her specialty. It was an honor to have her on to discuss this bundle in particular. Thank you once again, Suzanne, for joining in.
Thanks for having me, and thank you to Imprint for giving us Ghosts and Ghouls and Spectres for Mystic May.
Absolutely. We've got to thank Via Vision and Imprint for this. And, of course, Josh and all the other team members from Via Vision. Damn, the content they put out from Imprint, and as well as Via Vision, it's great. It's amazing.
Yes. Thank you, Suzanne, for coming on and sharing that knowledge once again. Very informative. And Imprint, another thank you for keep it coming. I mean, this is just incredible stuff.
Can't wait for the rest. And once again, and as always, John, thank you for being a part of this episode, as always. I guess that's the end of the episode. Thank you very much, everybody. Hope you have a good one. And very soon we'll have some great epic episodes to talk about. That I can tell you right now. Okay, anyway, have a good one and thank you so much. Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Bye.